Good morning. We're continuing our study of the book of John, and A Parenthesis in Eternity by Joel Goldsmith. We are on chapter 22, The Mystical Marriage. What comes after initiation and after you've been ordained is the mystical marriage. There's only, let's see, 1, 2, 3 pages here. So this is going to be a short talk. Oh, you know me better than that. Okay, let's see, this is August 15th, Sunday. I have 11:33. The meditation was good this morning. Thank you very much. I had a struggle with it at first, but then I settled down and the presence took over. And we're coming to see that that presence is the reality of us, right? That's the only master there is that presence. And when that presence walks and talks through an individual, as it did through Buddha and Jesus and Lao Tzu, well, it's safe to call them the master, because it's the same consciousness. All right, so I'll stop harping on that now. I know I'm overdue in making a Zoom talk, for those of you that like the Zoom talks. But it's so much easier to set up my computer and plug in a headset and put that on and start talking than it is to unplug the light behind me and bring it up here and plug it into an extension cord so it's in front of me, and then set up my green screen behind me, which is under the bed. I have to pull it out, get the stand ready, hook it up to the stand, make sure it's the right height, test it a couple of times, and then I'm ready to make a Zoom talk. And I still have to plug in my headset, because the other microphone just, I don't like it. This one picks up my real voice. So, it's kind of a struggle to get ready just to do the Zoom talk. And I have to uncover my camera and point it in the right direction. I have to test and make sure nothing's leaking behind me, because if it does, the green screen will have a corner that looks like somebody's about to beam up. So it's just a lot of work. And I don't have a house where I can leave it set up, because my computer is upstairs here in my bedroom. And my wife frowns on this big green screen being in the middle of our bedroom, so those are my excuses. And this is just so much easier for me. Okay, so let's continue. Chapter 22, The Mystical Marriage. Every mystic, that's all of us, if you've had a spiritual experience in one way or another, you have felt the presence or heard the still small voice, you're a mystic. And he says, every mystic eventually achieves such a oneness with the spirit within that forever afterward there is a union with the divine consciousness. The two become one. This marriage is symbolically described in some of the mystical literature as a love song. It has no sensuality in it because there is no corporeality about it. And yet, this relationship that develops between the spiritually endowed individual and God can be described only in terms of love. I don't know if you've ever been embraced by the Spirit. It is some kind of experience. It's something that I take it for granted. I shouldn't. But when it comes, it just leaves you with nothing to say except thank you, or I love you, and you rest back in it. When you're embraced by the Spirit, your mouth stops. Even your brain stops. Everything about you stops. And you're attentive and listening and resting. And it's wonderful. It's just wonderful. There's no judgment from that presence. There's no keeping score. That presence doesn't care what you've done in the past. I don't care if you've been a murderer. Look at Paul or Saul of Tarsus before he became Paul. The presence doesn't care. Once you're touched by that presence, you are no longer your own. Oh, you think you are, but you're not. Little by little, degree by degree, you will keep coming back and you will keep being called back to that presence until the time when you enter the mystical marriage. In the consummation of the mystical marriage, the Father and Son become one, I and my Father. And it's a very real experience. It's not a mental image. It's not a thought. It's not a desire. It's your sitting in the middle of the Father, and you know it. And the Father is flowing in the middle of you, and you know it. And there's one. There are no longer two. There is only one. To everyone who attains the mystical experience comes this changing of name. Saul became Paul. And of character, even though it may not be outwardly known. Those to whom it happens do not tell the world about it, but when it happens, they know it, and it happened to me. I've told you about it before. The bestowing of the robe is also a mystical experience, and everyone who comes into the mystical consciousness has felt that robe descend upon him. One morning, at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, I awoke in the dead of night. I had been mad at God because he wouldn't heal my wife. I wanted to heal my wife, and he wouldn't do it. And I tried everything, even calling Herb. And nothing changed. So I was mad at him, and I wasn't going to meditate anymore. This is why I say you're no longer your own. I had decided, no more meditation for me. I want to be normal. I'm tired of these spiritual experiences. What good are they if I can't even heal my wife? And I am the type of person that stays up till 2 or 3. I get so caught up in reading or studying or meditating or writing. And then I go to bed and I wake up at 10. That's my usual pattern. But this morning, I woke up at 4 o'clock. No reason. And because I was not fully awake yet, and I forgot my decision not to meditate anymore, when that voice said, meditate, I just obeyed. I walked out to the living room and sat on the couch, folded my legs up under me, and began a meditation. And it was something like Father, lift me up into thy presence, and let thy presence descend in me. Let there be no more mortal mind, but only thy presence. And I sat still, and I felt the presence touch me on the leg. But it didn't stop. The presence flowed up that leg and up the left side of my body and down my left arm. But it didn't stop. It flowed into my right leg and up my right side and down my right arm. But it did not stop. It flowed through the center of my body and up into my head. But it didn't stop. It filled the room I was in, and I filled the room I was in, and I and it were one, and it didn't stop. It filled the house I was in. I could feel myself in every corner of the house. And at that point, I knew it was not going to stop. I knew the next step was infinity. And it startled me. And no sooner did I feel that it subsided and went back to normal. And now I know two things. That is the robe they talk about, and it wasn't a permanent experience, so I don't have it permanently. But I also know you can try to turn your back on it. You can say you're not going to meditate. I did. I threw God out. No more. Go away. And in the dead of night, he came looking for me. And found me. And I was back hooked again in love with God. And so it is a relationship of love, a relationship of oneness. And there is a robe. And someday I'll have it permanently. I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. Here is the mystical marriage, Paul and his Christ. They are wedded, they are one. Paul does nothing without his Christ. The Christ thinks through him, the Christ works through him, and this is the fruitage of the marriage. And Joel stated that it was Christ Jesus that taught him through his consciousness. I myself don't feel it as an entity. I feel it as an entity in the sense that it's a presence. I feel it as my presence. I feel it as Christ's presence. I feel it as the Father's presence. I feel it as I, the I in the midst of me. Every mystic not only experiences this dual relationship of I and the indwelling Christ, but each one at certain times transcends this relationship and becomes that higher one. He loses sight of his human identity. That's what happened to me that morning on my couch. I and my Father are one. Before Abraham was, I am. This is the Master speaking from his Godhood, from those moments when he had transcended the duality of the marriage and had become the he that is greater than any human identity. All right, so we have an initiation in which we drop off mortality as scales dropping off our eyes, which is the experience that Paul had, and we put on immortality. We are being initiated. And then, in our meditations, sometimes when we're sleeping, sometimes when we're awake, we have this experience of the mystical marriage, in which at first there's two of us sitting in the chair, I and my Father. And then there's one, the Father, the consciousness, the capital S self. Mystical literature gives accounts of those who at some time or other transcended the sense of a presence always within them and became the presence itself. And that's the experience. You're meditating, you feel that presence descend in you, you relax, the Sabbath takes over, and you are that presence, and that presence is you. Oneness, one being, one life, one presence. There must inevitably come a time in our spiritual journey when we realize our I-ness, and then we are that one, and the other one has disappeared from view. So far, there is no record of anyone's attaining that level and remaining on it permanently. Although this does not mean that it has never happened, it means only that when that state is attained, where they have it permanently, the person's work is finished here, and he leaves this plane of consciousness. And that is our goal in the infinite way. In the first degree, we're practicing principles so that we can demonstrate a better life. We're learning the letter. We're practicing the letter. We practice remembering. We practice the presence. When we open the door before we go to work in the morning, we recognize the presence is with me wherever I go. I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. I go before thee to make the crooked places straight. I go to prepare a place for thee. We remember, he performeth that which is appointed for me to do. He perfects that which concerneth me. And we practice that. We sit down to dinner and we remember, he is the source of our grace. And I practiced it even with my wife. I know people don't like to talk about this, but I think it's necessary that people know. Before you make love, you can say, Father, love her through me. Or if you're a her, you can say, love him through me. And be an instrument. Now, all of that is part of practicing the letter. And in practicing the letter, we get to the place where we're ready for the book, The Art of Meditation. And that takes us into the second degree. We begin to practice meditation. We begin to stop. We have periods of stopping. We become still. We may use contemplation for quite a long time, but contemplation leads to a silence, a stopping, a stillness, a standing stock still. And into that stillness, we begin to have these experiences. We feel a presence. Something makes an impression, a spiritual impression, and we have to go write it down. Or there's a still small voice, and we hear it. But in one way or another, we are making that contact in our meditation. And then we are ready for the art of spiritual healing. and we begin to learn the healing principles of the Infinite Way. All of this is still pretty much the letter, but in our meditations we're beginning to experience the spirit. So we still have the letter, but we have the spirit too. Then we practice the spiritual healing principles, such as right identification and impersonalization and nothingizing. We begin to see that there's no power in mental images, and that we really do live and move and have our being in God, and God in us. I think at this point, more and more, we enjoy spending time in the presence rather than doing a lot of thinking or affirming or denying. We're just about ready for the third degree. The third degree is where we take everything we've learned in the first and second degrees and throw it out. Because now we're coming to a place above words and thoughts. All that letter was necessary. We couldn't have come this far without it. But if we stay with it, the letter killeth. Meaning, that's all we'll have eventually. We'll just be a mouth parroting out the letter. We won't have a spiritual awakening or spiritual experience, an ongoing one. So, maybe we stumble into Joel's 1955 Kailua study series. Maybe we stumble into Joel's work Beyond Words and Thoughts. One way or another, we begin to suspect there's a Sabbath, and we can live in the Sabbath consciousness. We really can be beholders and watch and bear witness to God in action. So we begin practicing. We begin practicing meditation without words and thoughts. And Joel says it's at this stage we may get a resentment against him or against the Infinite Way, but that's okay. We have to pass through it. And so this passing through, coming to a point beyond words and thoughts, this is the initiation that lifts you above material sense, or a material sense of living, into a spiritual sense of living. You are being initiated. And when you have come to a place where you can close your eyes and almost at will ascend up over the mind, you have been resurrected and ascended. And you're ready for the mystical marriage. The ultimate of the mystical experience is conscious union with God. That means consciously you're one with God, as I was on my couch. Well, and as I was a few minutes ago in meditation, our 11 o'clock meditation. It is a state of inner communion so intense and so lofty that the person disappears and exists then only as the infinite I, while at the same time maintaining his individuality as a person. There is no absorption into God at any time, even in the moment of conscious union. In the period just before the full and complete union, there is sufficient oneness so that the mystic perceives his oneness with all life. Always, in the end, the spiritual aspirant discovers that the kingdom of God is within him. And realizing that, pondering it, almost understanding it, step by step, he is taken along both the mental and the spiritual path, until one day the parenthesis is erased. His initiation is complete. Illumination comes. Everything drops away. The light is there, and he realizes, I am that which I am seeking, I am. Then comes a complete inner release from personal selfhood, from human sense, and I stands revealed within as his identity. Now, I want to read to you two accounts of this mystical marriage. Joel here says this, and notice how similar they are. Joel says, I am the life of the grass. I am the life of the tree. I am the life of the ocean. I can look up from under the sea and see the sky, but at the same time I can look down from the sky and see the sea. I can look out from a tree and see the birds, and at the same time be the bird that is sitting on the branch of the tree. I am the life of all being. I am consciously sitting on a star, or inside of a star, looking out at this world, while at the same time looking up from the ground at the star. I am the life of the stone, and at the same time I am looking up from the ground at the stone. I am here. I am there. I am everywhere. I permeate all creation. I can see in every direction at once, and always as if my selfhood were centered in just one tiny spot, and yet in every spot at the same moment. I am the life of every person around me. I am the mind, I am the law, I am the power of grace unto them. I am the way, and I am the truth, and I am the life. Okay, so that's Joel's experience. And here's mine. In 1979, I attended a spiritual class by Herb Fitch called Healing Outside of Time. During the class, I had my eyes closed and I went deeply into the silence of my being. While sitting there, I suddenly felt lifted up above my physical body. I was on a higher plane, another level of consciousness. The experience was intense. There's that word again. When I opened my eyes, I was still sitting in the class audience, but everything had changed. Herb called for a 15-minute break, and when I went outside, what I saw amazed me. In every direction I looked, I saw and felt my own infinite presence, yet also I still felt my individual self. They're almost identical, aren't they? I looked at the ocean and felt myself in the ocean and the ocean in me. I looked at the trees and felt myself in the trees and the trees in me. I looked at the sky and I could feel the sky within my being and my being in the sky. Isn't this the same thing? Almost identical. I looked at buildings and automobiles and electric wires and telephone poles and felt my being inside of them and them inside of my being. You see, there was nothing that was dead matter. It was all alive. And now I looked upon the people standing around me, and I felt my face on theirs and their faces on mine. It was impossible to tell where they left off, and I began. This could be the same thing that we just read in a book. The hard lines were no longer there. I felt a oneness with all life. I suddenly knew, without a shadow of a doubt, God is I am. Okay, so that's almost the same identical experience, isn't it? It's amazing. Okay, so now I want you to come with me into the Bible. But we're not going to look at John. We're going to look at Corinthians. We're going to look at Paul. Because Paul has something to tell us about this mystical marriage. And here he begins to tell you how to practice the principles which will lead to the initiation and then the mystical marriage. This is so fascinating. He says, while we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. So he's talking about we who are practicing these principles look at the invisible, not at the visible. Now listen to Joel from his book, The Early Years. We learn not to concern ourselves with the objects of sense, but always to look behind what the eye beholds to the infinite source of all manifestation. That's just exactly what Paul said. This is something you need to underline and put it in your forehead. It's fabulous, I tell you. To lose material sense, that's a personal sense of self. To lose material sense, we learn to discern that which is not visible. Now, Paul says, we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are not seen are eternal. And Joel says, we learn to discern that which is not visible to the outer senses. Our thought is turned more to the invisible things. These guys are in total agreement. Almost word for word. So, what that means is, when you're praying, when you're meditating, you don't look at the physical things, the material things, a material sense of self. You look behind it to the invisible. You learn to discern the invisible, which is the same as feeling that presence. Paul says, for we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God, an house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. You see, he's telling you that when personal sense is dissolved, you have a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. You have a house, you have a consciousness, you have a presence, eternal in the heavens. For in this we groan earnestly, desiring to be clothed upon with our house, which is from heaven. For we that are in this tabernacle do groan, being burdened, not for that we would be unclothed, but clothed upon, that mortality might be swallowed up of life. Now he that hath wrought us for the selfsame thing is God, For we walk by faith, not by sight, you see? Not by what you see, but by discerning the invisible. We are confident, I say, and willing rather to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. And so there it is. That's put in ancient words. But if we look at Joel's saying the same thing, he says, we prepare ourselves to be true prayers. We learn not to concern ourselves with effects, with objects of sense, but always to look behind what the eye beholds to the infinite source of all manifestation. To lose material sense, we learn to discern that which is not visible to the outer senses. Our thought is turned more to the invisible things. So after the resurrection and initiation, we know that we are looking into the invisible. It's just like that picture that was painted where the guy is pulling back the edge of the universe and peeking behind. That's what we're doing. So, the first stage, we're learning the letter. The second stage, we are learning to practice some principles. And the third stage, we are being initiated right out of our personal sense of self and into a feeling of the presence. And then as we go further and further and practice this being in the presence and the presence in us, eventually comes that experience that Joel described, that I described, where for a moment you're not there. There's only the presence there. And that presence is one with all life. And it gives you an experience that you will not forget. You realize, this is what life is supposed to be. This is what I'm supposed to be feeling and knowing and walking in. And yet, if we have a work to do, we are not allowed to stay on that high plane. We have glimpses until our work is finished. When our work is finished, we step out of this experience right into that experience. We step out of this plane into the next one, out of this consciousness into the permanent dispensation. The mystical marriage is a very real experience. And something that will change you forever. And now I would like to share a couple of things from my journal. February of 2000. I had a dream last night. There was a form, a body, called me. And I looked down and saw it was dissolving. Down to my waist, I was invisible. The second half, not yet dissolved. Looking across the room, there was another body. A brand new me. A new form, already formed and completed. Enter the new form created for you. And two shall be standing in a field. One shall remain. New wine into new wineskins. I am. Now that is the type of experience that comes to us as we are practicing what Paul says, what Joel says, looking behind this universe and focusing, discerning the invisible. October 15th, 2001. Without eyes, I can see. Without ears, I can hear. Without a brain, I still have thought. Who am I? I am the resurrection. Here are the two. There is me, and there is the consciousness of the presence. October 14th of 02. The consciousness of the presence of God is not dependent on what you know or don't know. The consciousness of the presence of God is not dependent on what you believe or don't believe. The consciousness of the presence of God is not dependent on your meditation or your prayer. The consciousness of the presence of God is not even dependent on whether you are alive or not. Lazarus was good and dead, yet the consciousness of the presence of God functioned. The girl was dead and lying in her bed, yet the consciousness of the presence of God was there. Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. I have the power to lay it down, and I have the power to pick it up again. The consciousness of the presence of God is what I am. Here are the two, consciousness and self. November 21st, 2002. I thank thee, who is ever with me, consciousness. For even though I know that thou art ever with me, nevertheless thou lovest me so much that thou hast appeared as a companion on this path, someone to share these insights with, someone to call friend. But I know it is thou appearing as. You see? It's wonderful. This one I love because it just shows the love of Christ, which is consciousness. In a dream, this is January 27th of 2004. I was flying and I pumped my arms to raise up above the rooftops, buildings, treetops, and telephone lines. I was floating and looking down. I was grateful that I had risen above the world collective human consciousness of good and evil. But I started to slowly drift down, and I began to pump my arms again to stay up above the things, high up above. Then suddenly, the invisible Christ spirit wrapped around my arm with its arm, and I felt a tingling in my arm and began to rise gently higher and higher, when a voice inside me said, "You don't have to work that hard." And then I woke up in my bed. Now, if that's not love, I don't know what is. Christ consciousness within me telling me I don't have to work so hard. Practicing the letter, which is pumping your arms. There comes a time when you can rest back, and Christ will lift you. It's fabulous. It's just absolutely fabulous. I like this one too, because the feeling in me was love. I was love. There was no Bill here, there was love. So it was September 23rd of 2004. I dreamt I was in a bookstore. There was a homeless man on the floor, covered with sores. He had sores all over him, on his face too. I laid down next to him, and we talked of spiritual topics. I felt the presence, warm and tingling, flow through my hip and into that man. He sat up suddenly and said, "What's that? What is that?" I smiled and I said, "Grace." I kissed him on his cheek, between the cracks and the sores. He kissed me in return, and I woke up. Now, that, my friends, is love in action. Here is an example of a principle of doing what Paul said and what Joel said, discerning the invisible. It was on October 31st, Happy Halloween, of 2007. Spiritual substance. The secret, of course, is the conscious awareness of spiritual substance, which is that invisible presence. God is the substance of all form, and that form is invisible. The mind is a substanceless shadow appearing as form. So rest back in the conscious awareness of spiritual substance as the Word made flesh. In this way, behold, I make all things new. Isn't that wonderful? That is just so wonderful. Here's another principle of looking into the invisible. June 15th of 2009. Truth, entertained in consciousness, becomes the substance of body, business, home, life. But truth entertained in consciousness is not a statement of truth in the mind, not a thought about truth. Truth entertained in consciousness happens when all thought about truth comes to an end. Then, into that silence, truth announces itself. I am the truth. And you feel that presence. In August of 2015 came a sentence in my meditation. Very simple, only 6 words, but it's some of the most beautiful words I've ever heard. A world untouched by mortal thought. A world untouched by mortal thoughts. Just think. Is there such a world? A world untouched by mortal thoughts? You think there's such a world? Let's see. Behind or above the sense life, there is a world, a universe of spirit, governed by love, peopled with children of God living in the household or temple of truth. This world is real and permanent. Its substance is eternal consciousness. In it, there is no awareness of discords or even of temporary material good. So yes, there is behind this world a universe, a world of spirit, a world untouched by mortal thought. Think of that. Think of that. If you have ever had a meditation in which thought slowed down and eventually came to a stop, you sat there in silence, waited. Suddenly there was a flooding of the presence, and you knew, hey, this thing is real. God really is a presence within. And you rested in it, just the joy, the peace, the quiet, the serenity of being in the presence and the presence in you. Then you opened your eyes and perhaps you had something to do. Maybe you needed to make a grocery list and go to the store. Perhaps you had some sewing to do. Maybe you needed to check out your investments and see how they were doing. Maybe you needed to prepare your taxes. Maybe you needed to sweep the house, vacuum the house. Maybe you needed to prepare dinner. So you got up from your meditation and you went out and you prepared dinner or prepared your taxes or cleaned the house. And while you did that, you were back as a human being thinking thoughts about what time your spouse got home so they could enjoy the dinner with you. All kinds of things. What appointments you had tomorrow. Maybe you have the TV on and you're watching the affairs over in Israel and thinking mortal thoughts almost continuously, so fast they come. Now imagine you're in your meditation. You do what Joel says, what Paul says, what I say. You look through the personal, mortal, material sense into that invisible universe. Thought has come to an end. And for a moment or a few minutes, you're resting in a universe, in a world of no thoughts. Now imagine, if you will, after you've been initiated, after you've been ordained, after you've experienced the ascension, after you've been living in the third degree, you get up from your meditation in which you have been resting in that universe of no mortal thought. And you live and move and have your being in all things in a world untouched by mortal thought. Now, because you leave your chair doesn't mean that the mortal thoughts come back. You have found a way to live in the universe untouched by mortal thoughts. And as you do your chores, and as you go to the store, and as you prepare your taxes, you are still in a world untouched by mortal thoughts. Think of that, living in a world always untouched by mortal thoughts. Not just a few minutes here and there, but a continuous revelation. This is what happens when you've been lifted up and prepared for the mystical marriage. Because after the mystical marriage, you will no longer be a mortal. Yes, there will be times when you have mortal thoughts, because how else can you help anybody? You couldn't help anybody If they told you they had a problem, you couldn't relate to it. So, at times, you're given that moral thought so you can say, yes, I understand, I remember, and here's what I did. Or here's what Joel says. Or here's what the Bible says. Or here's what was revealed in meditation. But you will not be the same mortal. More and more your time will be spent in the invisible. Joel says it's like being backstage. You remember that? Like being backstage. And you and your Christ, you and your presence, you and your Father will never be separated again. And I have it on good authority that when your work's finished and you step out of this plane, you will step behind it into that invisible realm where mortal thoughts do not enter. Okay. We managed to take 2.5 pages and make it last for an hour. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming to this. You draw these talks out of me, and so it doesn't surprise me when you hear what it is that you needed to hear. Because I am not outside of you. I, the I that speaks, am inside of you, in your consciousness. And this is leading to the place where you are forever one with your beloved. And I am so glad, so, so glad. So grateful that I can be one with my beloved. You know, he came looking for me. I told him I didn't want anything more to do with him, and I tried to separate myself, but it was too late. It was too late. He was already a part of my consciousness. And he came looking for me, and he found me at 4:00 in the morning. And I have been in love with him ever since. So, this is a wonderful path, a wonderful journey. Again, don't be afraid of losing your material sense of self, because you will gain an infinite, invisible, spiritual sense of self. And he who loses his life will find it. He who loses his life will keep it unto life everlasting. Peace. Peace I leave with you. Look into the invisible and receive it.